Well, folks, welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. This is Lisa Anderson with you, and we're almost finishing up March, y'all. And so, I don't know, I love April and May, so I'm okay with it. Time marches on, but as we love to do on the show, usually, here's a little bit of what is coming up. For our inbox, we have a listener who's asking, what is the purpose of prayer if God's will is always going to come to pass? That is a good question. So one of our counselors is going to weigh in on that. And then for our culture segment, Boundless Contributor, you may have read a couple of her articles. Waija Tam is here to talk about a new book that she has written titled Dream Brave. And she's going to tell part of her story. If you read her articles, which you need to hop over to boundless.org and look them up, they are crazy about what God has done in and through her in ministry around the world, and her and her relationship with her husband and family. It's just super inspiring. So check it out, but also listen to this segment because she's going to talk about how some of these things came together in her life. Okay, here we are for our roundtable, and because it's the end of March, we're going to talk about spring. And so we have got Braden, Ryan, and Courtney here. Hey, you guys.
Howdy.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good to have you. And this is going to be just a fun conversation, okay? Because we're going to talk about spring. This is funny because Bree, on our team, was just saying the other day, like, does anyone in Colorado like spring? Because it's windy, the trees are generally still bare, you have dirty snow and random snow and wetness and stuff. And, you know, it's not like spring in the South, y'all. I'm just going to be honest. It's not like going down to Georgia where my sister's already texting me pictures of azaleas and who knows even what else. And I'm a little bit bitter about it, but that's okay because we're going to talk about spring wherever you are because we're literally talking to people around the world here. So sorry for those of you in Australia who are just coming into your fall and or winter right now, but you know what? You just had summer, so don't complain at us. Okay. So let's jump in here. Let's talk about spring in the list of seasonal favorites. Do you guys like spring? And if so, what do you like about it? Or are you like Brie and just kind of hating? I don't know. Braden, you start.
Yeah, I would put spring probably third, between okay. third and second.
That's not good, but okay.
Wow, you have rankings for each one. That's yeah. pretty impressive.
Definitely summer is the highlight in Colorado, just so beautiful here. And then the fall is so beautiful as well. But I would put spring and fall kind of in that same third spot together almost for different reasons. So
okay.
Yeah, I am a spring enjoyer.
Oh, okay.
I think I would put it at number two, just because summer is just better spring. But spring is when you get out there, true. You start planting stuff. I like plants. I like gardening. I like growing trees. Mm-hmm. So it's the time to get out there and get that going.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I actually get low-grade anxiety around spring because I have very limited things that I plant. And even going out and purchasing those and getting them planted is like a Leviathan task for me.
I'm just going to be under the weather.
I'm just like, my sisters are like giving me all these photos of like, try this. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to try? Whatever I find at Lowe's, that's what I'm trying. Okay, let's be honest about it. So Courtney, how about you?
Yeah, I just bought my first plants and I only got the ones that were registered as easy. Because
well, yeah, and you can't plant them here for like 2 months. So no, what are you even doing?
You just put them inside on a window, okay. And I'm like, don't die. I just killed a succulent in my office, so I need
easy. That's hard to do. Yeah, okay, that's hard to do. Yeah. Admittedly, okay.
I would say spring is actually number one for me. Spring and fall are probably tied. Oh, I don't like excessive heat, and I don't like excessive cold. And I feel like Colorado is excessively cold or excessively hot in the winter and in the summer. So spring is a pretty fun transition season.
Yeah, I would say the reason I love spring and summer is definitely my number one too, because, and I've said this on the show before, but I cannot reiterate it too many times. Long days, cheap berries, lots of things to do. I mean, it's a great opportunity. And my birthday, okay, let's be honest. But anyway, spring is great because it's leading up to all that and you're getting the days are longer, you're seeing stuff turn, you're seeing there's the hope of like, oh, we're getting out of winter. I do love it for that reason. Now, Braden, you didn't mention why you do love spring because especially here in Colorado, you like to get up in the mountains.
Yeah, I do. Spring is definitely a really fun season just for skiing, and baseball is starting. I'm a huge baseball fan, so spring training is super fun.
Yeah.
And just kind of like that transition into summer is awesome, especially end of spring here in Colorado. So those are the highlights of spring for me, but spring skiing.
Yeah.
It's the best. So,
well, and that's a good, so that kind of leads into my next question, which is what are things that you tend to do in spring that you wouldn't do in other seasons? I mean, clearly you can ski and board in the winter, I guess, if we have a decent amount of snow that comes in, but weirdly spring is a higher snowfall out here anyway in the West, but What does spring mean for you as far as, like, does it trigger anything in your brain as far as, well, okay, planting? I mean, Ryan mentioned that. Other things that you do or that you don't do at this point?
Yeah, I'll kind of just carry on what I was going with there. Baseball is great. The beginning of the season is starting, and all the pitchers, catchers are reporting for the MLB season. So that's like super fun for me as a big baseball guy. Mm. And just the atmosphere of spring training for baseball is great too. But then also March Madness is super fun. So that's something that I look forward to with getting together with people, watching those games. And then it's just a beautiful time to get up into the mountains and get those bluebird days, especially here. So
Awesome. Yeah, in spring, there's just one of those days where you come in, the morning's a little bit cold, and then you walk outside of your work or your house or whatever, and you get blessed with one of those 72-degree days.
Yeah.
And the sun hits your skin, and you feel the seasonal depression just leave, and everything feels so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you're triggered, just like the trees, to go and start planting, and then that triggers the other, like, menial labor parts of my brain. So it's like, all right, I got to clean out the garage. I don't know. It's a very productive season for me, and I love it because it sets up summer just really nicely.
When I think of spring in Colorado, I think of dramatically different things than you do. Like, I think of first, don't take off your snow tires. It's a trick. Like,
that's true.
It's coming again. I mean, I think of don't hike 14ers, the amount of stories I've heard of people who are like, the weather's nice, let's go do a hike, and it's actually like seven feet of snow. I made that mistake last year.
Or a blizzard happens,
And I had spikes on my feet for the whole time of like literally 7 feet of snow. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing I think of is layers. Like, I cannot wear, you have to wear at least 7 layers because it's going to be 2 degrees when you leave, and it's going to be at least 90 degrees when you get home. And so I think of different things, but I also think of the sunshine and the flowers and the pretty things. But Colorado, I think, is a little harder for spring.
Yeah. It's two degrees in the morning, but that 90 degrees when you walk outside, come on now.
Okay. Mildly exaggerated, but okay. Yeah, we get your point. I'm going to, something that actually I associate with spring, largely because of my mother and growing up, my mom was a big proponent of spring cleaning. Mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all have done that or been forced to do that or whatever, but in our house, it was like an event. I mean, you would start smelling vinegar. Mm-hmm. All the cupboards were open. Mom was taking dishes out of the cupboards. We were wiping down walls. I mean, it got hardcore. Mm-hmm. And I think my moderately aggressive, controlling nature about cleaning came from my mom because of spring cleaning and cleaning out the fridge. And it was like, you're going to take all those drawers out. And this happened several times, I mean, this wasn't just one time a year, but it was like, you're not just wiping out drawers. You're taking them out and you're going to like hose them out with soap and stuff like that. So that's just a weird but fun memory for me too. I will say too, at the risk of being super spiritual, I also like spring because of Easter. Easter is my favorite holiday. And so all you Christmas people, don't write to me and be all like, why don't you love Christmas? I love Christmas, but I like Easter more. So because I love Jesus and that he rose from the dead. So anyway, that said, that is really fun. Now, where else? Okay. Braden, I know you're pretty much a native Coloradan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So that's why you're talking about the mountains and, you have to go a little bit south for all your MLB stuff and training. But have any of you grown up elsewhere where there are comparisons of what spring looks like or the vibe around spring?
Oh, yeah. I was born in Washington, lived there for about a little under 10 years. Then I moved to Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
And now I'm back in Colorado, so like right in between. So I've experienced a decent amount. Louisiana, it just starts getting really muggy, but not as bad as summer. And again, that planning, you start getting out there, you start planning.
Mm-hmm.
Washington, more near the coast, so we start getting some of that water. It's a little bit nicer than Colorado. It's not quite as sporadic of like, hey, here's 3 feet of snow that just came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. But is there dreariness?
No, not really.
You didn't have that?
No,
okay,
because no.
I feel like people always complain about that. Like
I was
rain
near
and...
Seattle.
Okay.
So Seattle, maybe it's dreary in Seattle.
Okay.
Maybe there's a book about
you're
that.
You're more inland.
Yeah. But okay. We were like in farming communities and stuff like that.
Nice.
As I'm talking, I'm just realizing I'm just a menial laborer. And everything about spring is just about plants and work.
Tilling the soil. Okay, that's good. Courtney, where are you from?
I'm a native Coloradan.
You are?
So, yes.
Have you ever lived outside of the state?
For like 4 months, not in the springtime, then more
really?
Summer, North Carolina. But yeah, Colorado is pretty much all I know.
Okay, but eventually you will be moving.
Then will know the East Coast.
Yeah,
and it's springtime.
Courtney's going out. Her husband's going to start graduate work. And so they're going to make the move to the East. So you will.
Yeah
there's a lot of difference there.
Ask me in a year.
In the seasons. We'll see how that goes. So, all right. What do you feel like? I mean, I think there are times where, especially coming out of winter, we get into these ruts of just staying at home, mm-hmm. not wanting to get out, not wanting to do stuff, especially, you know, when the days are so short and, you know, it's like dark at 3 or something. I don't know. What would be your encouragement to folks to kind of say like, okay, I feel like we're like Punxsutawney Phil or something, like poke your heads out, people, like let's do something. But what would you say, like in friend groups and elsewhere, of just like, what does it look like to get out and kind of say, hey, the seasons are changing, let's do something different?
Yeah, I would say for me, it's kind of just paying attention to opportunities for the weather to be nice and getting to go play pickleball or spike ball on the nice days and even just little things like that. But just finding ways to get together and get outside, or even personally for me, when the weather is nice, working here at Focus, or even just getting off work, going on little walks and just seeing the change in the greenery and all that is really fun about spring too. So mm-hmm. I would say being aware of opportunities, and when you do see it's going to be 60 and sunny on Thursday, just making sure that you're planning something with people then. So
yeah, that pickleball season starting back up.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. That's secret sauce right there.
Mm-hmm. Never even played pickleball.
Oh,
I just hear so much about it. I should probably try it.
I did once and I got injured,
yeah,
so I'm waiting to get
right.
back on the court. I don't know. Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with what Braden said. If you have a job and you see that it's going to be 70 degrees on Thursday, take that day off. work's not that important. Get out there in the sun.
Focus just bleeped that.
Or take a walk at lunch. That's another alternative.
Yeah. Or just quit. That's the other one.
Or quit. Yeah, there you go.
I'm the friend in the friend group. I'm always chomping at the bit to get outside, to go do activities. I convinced my friends to go on a like 5-hour road trip. Well, it was 10 hours round trip in the middle of winter. We got caught in like 2 blizzards, so mm-hmm. my fault. Sorry, guys. But yeah, spring, when it starts coming around, like get out there, just try to do as much as you can. Get into some sports, pickleball, I highly recommend. If you want to get into something else, that's absolutely perfect. A unique thing, man, I'm really just talking about plants as I was thinking about this. But like one thing that I'm already planning is we're going to go out to a bison ranch.
Oh.
And we're going to go do a tour of that. And then we're going to have lunch on the Bison Ranch.
And so
it's like, it's awesome. And the rates are cheaper because it's springtime and people don't start going until it's summer. So like get out there and just like find these weird little opportunities and start mm-hmm. doing stuff and take the day off.
Good. Okay.
So I think it's a little harder for me to get outside from going from winter to spring because mm-hmm. I am personally a sufferer of seasonal depression. Like in the winter, I go home and I take a nap and I nap for 48 hours and then I get up and then I take another nap and then I nap for another 48 hours. Like I go into hibernation.
Okay.
And so transitioning into spring, first of all, is a little difficult for me. So my husband kind of has to pull me outside. But I would think for people who are maybe a little bit more like me, I would advise, you know, take the opportunities to enjoy the little things and build up to the bigger things. Like when spring starts and I'm still feeling like the itch to go back to bed, I'll open up all my windows. The whole side of my apartment is windows. Mm-hmm. And I'll make my favorite drink and open the window and just look outside, you know. And it's like a baby step. And the next day I go for a walk. And then the next day I'll maybe hammock for an hour. Or a couple of years ago, my husband introduced me to geocaching. So yeah. That was pretty fun. Okay. Like, let's just go on an adventure. So
yeah,
I think it's starting with little things, at least for people who are maybe have struggled transitioning between seasons mm-hmm. and then building into bigger, more fun things like a hike. But yeah. I know for me, when I open up the windows in spring, I'm like, okay, the energy is back.
Yeah. No, that's so good. Have you guys ever, any of you ever processed, you know how there's a lot of you know, spiritual lessons or sometimes devotionals or whatever around the implications of spring and whatever. Have you guys ever thought of that, or is that helpful, or has it been helpful in your spiritual walk as you kind of walk through the seasons?
Oh, definitely. I love the metaphors and just the pictures of spring with your walk with the Lord. And in my life personally, I have experienced a lot of loss and death in the like heart of winter months. So seeing the Lord regrow my heart out of some of that is just a perfect picture of how he works and, how he's under the soil cultivating our growth in him, no matter what is going on. So I think that's really my favorite part about spring is seeing the regrowth of the trees and the flowers bloom and understanding that in the season of death, in the season of winter, he's working underneath the layers to make that possible. So,
cool. Yeah, all throughout the Bible, there is a ton of correlation between spiritual principles and growing principles, seed time and harvest. One of my favorite verses, Galatians 6:9, talks about sowing so that we may reap. And if we faint not at the promises of God, we will reap that good harvest. Mm-hmm. And so I like to make it a discipline that even though I don't enjoy as much doing like large farming or anything like that, I try to make it a discipline that every time that there's an opportunity to grow something, put something in the dirt, care for it, water it, watch it grow. And then as I do that, usually spring and summer, I will have just little prayer time, devotional time, something like that, that as this little plant is growing, I like to take time to meditate on how it's growing, how it started from nothing, this little seed. It put roots down. It started growing up. Now it's manifesting. And how do I replicate that in my life? What is God trying to show me? What is God trying to grow me in? And it's just a very simple little meditation, but it really helps me keep centered on this is something new and God is doing something new and there's always a ways to grow.
I so love that question because actually, I think it was about 2 years ago now, I went to an Easter service, and typically Easter services are about the resurrection of Christ, right? Like, we're celebrating. He's alive. Mm-hmm. And I went to the service where it was all focused on the death piece of how beautiful the death of Christ actually was in terms of in order for something to become new, it first must die. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about that with my personal walk, it's just so encouraging of so many things inside of me are dying. But it's an inspiration with like spring of, but in order for something beautiful to come, something first must die. Right. Mm-hmm. In order for the resurrection, Christ had to die first. Mm-hmm. And so I think spring is a great reminder that there is life after death. And that's a great picture for Christians who are called to throughout scripture die to self. Yeah. It's a reminder that there's something coming that's even more beautiful in the springtime. That's actually one of my favorite songs ever is called Springtime, and it's about exactly that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, it's funny, as I was thinking about this, similar to what Braden said, I too have, you know, being a little older than you guys, have walked through a lot of loss, both my parents, gone or with Jesus, thankfully, but, and just other things that have been hard, you know, wrong, bad relationships and stuff like that. And I always think of Psalm 30, you know, that says weeping remains for a night, but joy comes in the morning. And I think spring is such a great picture of that. And just, I remember someone describing one time, like, the whole reason that there are valleys is because there are also mountains. Yeah. And so you're never just going to be stuck. As long as you keep moving, you're never going to be stuck in a valley. God always brings something out of it and brings renewal and brings, you know, he has a purpose, obviously. And sometimes it's hard to hang on. Sometimes it's hard to just feel like this is not going to, you know, or you feel like it's not going to end and stuff. And you feel like I'm stuck here. And I've had that even with health challenges and all kinds of stuff. And so it is encouraging to be a few years beyond that and be like, wow, God did show up. That was something that happened. That was something, you know, where I saw his faithfulness in that. And so I think always when I think of spring, I think of that of like, You always think, like, when you head into fall, like, oh, fall's so pretty and it's so great and I like to see leaves falling. And it's weird how just after a few months you're like, it's so great to see leaves coming back on the trees. It's like we're fickle people. Like, we don't want it to remain one way for too long. So that's cool. So, all right, quickly here as we finish, is there anything this spring that you want, maybe something different, something that you want to see happen, something that you want to try? I mean, clearly bison ranches, whatever, we're going to try those. But anything that might be out of the ordinary that might characterize your spring?
I feel like I just love the way spring is for me, baseball, skiing, but I don't know.
He doesn't want it to change.
It's hard to think about doing something else than that. I just love those parts of spring. I did buy a pickleball paddle recently, so okay. I will plan on playing more of that. Disc golf and
okay. What about washing down your walls? I mean, I gave that idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, like give it a try. My mom would be
proud. Focusing on that spring cleaning. Yeah.
I was just throwing it out there.
No, I'll play pickleball.
Yeah, I'll go with pickleball.
Good. For those of you that aren't in the studio, Braden looks like he enjoys baseball and skiing, so I can 100% back him up on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want this spring to be a time of challenge for me. I think there's like every winter I get like a bunch of ideas of things I want to do once the sun comes back out, mm-hmm. and then weather starts getting better and I do like two things. Mm-hmm. So this time I've actually been diligent in recording those, and I actually want to try to do as many as possible, not just two or three things. Mm-hmm. So I really want to try to challenge myself to do all the things that I said I was going to do, try to grow in that way.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
That is such a loaded question for me, Lisa.
Answer it now.
Okay. Let me just think of every single big thing that's happening in mm-hmm. the spring. But I think this will be quite the season of transition for me and my family. So as I think you mentioned, I'm changing jobs and that's in the springtime. So mm-hmm. that's going to be a major transition. I've been at Focus for 3 years now, and moving on to something new will be a crazy transition and hopefully an exciting adventure. We're moving soon across the country. We're both Colorado natives, so mm-hmm. That will be a big transition. I think my husband's starting law school very soon. We're accepting applications this month, so mm-hmm. that's a big part of this season. So I think when I think of spring and what it will be characterized by is, like I said, a lot of death to self and a lot of regrowth mm-hmm. in me and my husband and new opportunities and new places to live and new things to do. So I'm both terrified and excited and mm-hmm. hopefully things grow back in the springtime. Yeah. But that would be a big season.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I think for me, I think of like making some relational priorities, especially with my family and extended family. And I already have a few trips where I'm going to invest in different family members and different mm-hmm. stages of our relationships and stuff. And I felt like last year was just kind of like, it was September and I was like, what even happened? Like, where is this year? And so I just want to kind of take the proverbial bull or bison by the horns and have this year be a little bit different. So yeah, it'll be exciting. So you guys, thanks so much for weighing in. Awesome thoughts.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
California driving, had to get out. Distance got me wondering where you are right now. One-way conversations got me worn down. Pouring out my heart, wish you would speak a sound. I don't know what I'm after. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm after. All I know is I'm lost. I don't know what I'm after. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm after. All I know is I'm lost without your love. There's no point in even waking up. I can't get you out of my head. And I don't wanna ever forget. You give me what the world can never give. I can't live without you. I can't live without you. You are mine. I can't live without you. Yeah, can't live without it. Thank you.
Well, folks, here we are for our culture segment, and today's guest, I have to preface by saying you may know who she is by what she has written for Boundless, because we have had her write two of our feature articles in recent years, including one titled Why I Dated a Transplant Patient, and in fact, then married him, and one titled Will Marriage Interrupt My Career Goals? So I am so privileged to welcome to the Boundless Show my friend and a friend of Boundless, Wijah Tam. Wijah, so great to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. It's so much my joy and privilege. I'm excited.
Well, this is fun. And I know that there are, I got to tell our listeners in Singapore, because we have them, they're collectively cheering that one of their own is actually on the Boundless Show. Because it's like, you know, we feature all these Americans and it's like, can we have someone who's like from somewhere else, including Southeast Asia? So super fun for us to be able to do this. Well, we're going to get a little bit of your story here, Wijah. And I want to say that we're gonna talk specifically about a book that you have out that is brand new. It is titled Dream Brave, A Dare to Live by Faith When You Feel Too Small. And if there's anything that illustrates that, it's your own story. And I want you to start out by telling us the tale of what you decided to do at 18 years old and how that birthed really where your ministry has gone, what you have chosen to do in walking out your own faith. Just talk about that experience of your own little travels. And even I love how you talked about how your dad wasn't a big fan of it at the get-go, but you eventually were able to go. So tell us that.
Yes. Sure, Lisa. Wow. So the first chapter of the book actually starts with it being entitled When Your Loved Ones Say No. Mm. And my story really begins with my search for God, because I grew up in a household that worshipped idols. We were Buddhist / Taoist, and I never knew about Jesus as the God of the universe. Mm. But one day while my family was praying in a temple that we had traveled for hours and hours just to get to year after year, I felt a voice speaking to me saying, I am God, but I am not here. And that kind of gave me the chills and goosebumps, because there I was kneeling in front of like a golden sleeping Buddha. And I felt this voice, which I knew was beginning my spiritual search. So a couple of months after that, I went on a little kind of youth expedition trip to Cambodia with my school. And little did I know that that would begin to open my eyes to a side of poverty that I'd never seen before. And then in the following year, a couple of months later, I actually asked my dad to allow me to take 6 weeks off to go on my own to Nepal to stay at a children's home. And at the time, I mean, it was just a ridiculous request. My dad was completely thrown off, because there I was, you know, just, you know, in a normal middle class, you know, well-to-do family. And now asking just to go off, I had never even like been allowed to maybe stay past like 10 p.m. or like midnight, you know, except maybe once for prom or something like that. So it was just such a crazy request to him, especially at the time when there was the Maoist uprising, there was political instability in Nepal. But I just had this hunger to just go and avail myself somewhere. But little did I know that just 6 weeks into the stay at this children's home in Kathmandu, that suddenly we would all be traumatically evicted overnight. And that event really marked my life indelibly, because suddenly I began to ask this question, God, if you are a good God, then how can this happen? And I began to ask God what I could do. And the scary thing was that at the time, I asked the house parents, was there anything at all like a 17-year-old who was awkward and depressed could do? And what they said was, we need a permanent home, because if not, actually what happened was that year after year, they would just be evicted by different landlords because of the stigma on unwanted girls in the home. Mm-hmm. And so there I was with the magnitude of this ask, because to have a permanent home would cost something like $100,000. And I told the God that I just had come to know. I said, God, if you are real, like, is there anything you can do with me? And suddenly in the next couple of days and weeks, as I stayed in with the girls, I saw images of these beautiful landscapes that I had seen in Cambodia and Nepal just downloaded in my head. And it was a story about a little girl who had lost and found her kind. And that was really inspired by my time in Cambodia when I had met this little boy and another girl, both of whom wanted to be a doctor just like me, but did not have the means to because they grew up on a farm. And when I left, the parting gift that this little boy gave to me was actually a kite made out of a trash bag. Hmm. And I remember it was such a poignant gift because it represented to me the dreams that we all have, and yet not all of us have the means to fly them. Hmm. And so that really marked my life. The kite became like a symbol of dreams, and actually our God-given dreams, because it's anchored by a cross. Hmm. And so that began, you know, my journey. And so when God caused that little book that I published called Kite Song to raise over $100,000 to purchase that home, and then as I watched the girls grow up by visiting them, you know, once every 2 years or so, as I saw them grow and their lives change, I began to see that, wow, it's not the amount of faith that we have in our own abilities that make a difference, but it is in whom we place our faith in. And so that really marked me and changed my life forever.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so amazing. And I wanted you to tell that story before I remind folks who are listening who you are. So Wijah is actually the founder of Kite Song Global, which the book that you published and were able to build the girls' home and all of that, and like you said, have visited since then. You've now started a ministry, an organization that is even doing more humanitarian work around the world. For those of you who don't know, and we'll have this in the show notes, but Wijah, she's a speaker, she's an author, obviously a blogger. She's a humanitarian doctor, having studied both in Singapore and then at Johns Hopkins here in the States. And so I think that but it was all born out of that dream long before all of this education and all the things that you've done, with God just taking your heart and what he was calling you to do with the little that you had. And so that's so neat. I'd love to ask you, so you talk about, you know, in Dream Brave, you talk about us pursuing the dreams that God has put in our hearts. How do we know, what would be your advice to someone who says, well, how do I know, Wijah, if a dream is actually from God or if it's something I'm just making up on my own because of my own ambition?
Wow, that is such a great question, Lisa. And I think it's the right question to ask, like, all the time. So what I often do is, I actually believe that when we have a nudge in our heart, a dream in our heart, that part of it is from God, because God made us. He put dreams and desires in our hearts. But as you and I both know, that our hearts can sometimes turn a good thing into an ultimate thing. And that's how some of our dreams can become personal idols of our own. And so one thing I've really learned over the years is to hold that tension between wanting to pursue that God-given dream, that desire with all of our hearts, and yet also holding the other side intention, which is to surrender it completely to God at the same time. And so even at this time, as we are, you know, praying and asking God, Lord, would you send us to the mission field in Tanzania? We are, you know, on one hand, every night praying together on our knees with our kids, saying, God, would you open the door for us to enter the mission field? On the other hand, we are holding it loosely. Our application started last year, and through a series of delays, and I went for surgery and I had some unexpected health complications, I had to give it all up to the Lord and say, Lord, do you still want us to go? So on one hand, we are fervently pressing in to say, God, would you bring these dreams to pass? On the other hand, we are saying with just as much passion, let your will be done. Mm-hmm. And I think through that tension, that's where God can really show up, because it's through that mix of beautiful trust and yet complete surrender where he can fully come through. It's when we yield ourselves completely to him with 100% passion and 100% surrender, where I think he shows himself most real to us.
Yeah. So what would you say, what have you and Cliff done specifically in the waiting? Because I think a lot of young adults are like, well, I feel like God is calling me to, whether it's the mission field or a career change or to a relationship or whatever, but they're like, they feel like they're wasting time or just treading water without, and how can they maximize the season that they're in while being hopeful for what God may have for them?
Wow, that is a great question, Lisa. So one of the stories that I think I might have shared in the articles I've written or even the book is how Cliff and I decided to hear and sense God through the circumstances of our life and aligning it with the Lord's Word. So I think one of the best books that has changed my life is Experiencing God by Henry Blackaby, because he talks about this myriad of ways that we can hear God and see Him work and thus obey. So it's about reading the Word and then aligning it with circumstances in our lives, aligning it with the peace that we derive through prayer, and also with what we hear through community and friends. And sometimes not everything has to align, but it forces us to be in a space of discernment. So for example, when Cliff and I married, we thought to ourselves, you know what, someday we're going to do missions together. We both love serving the poor. We both believe that this is an important value to us. But it wasn't until he had a liver crisis that we really felt God speaking to us that, look, you know, you don't have all of your lives to kind of wait it out. Why don't you step forward and take a leap of faith and apply to go to the mission field soon after you're married? And so after our first year of marriage together, we decided to serve in Uganda as a couple for 1 year. After that, when we came back, I felt the Lord actually calling me to pursue my Master's of Public Health at Johns Hopkins so that I could do more and impact more communities. This is where the tension came in, because Cliff at the same time had this long awaited, like he was super excited about this privileged opportunity to serve as the missions coordinator, almost like a pastoral position in our huge church in Singapore. And at that time, it's like exactly what you're asking in the question, when people are navigating, you know, critical transitions in their lives about career, right? I mean, this is Cliff's chance to pursue his career. This is my chance to go to Johns Hopkins. And at the same time, in the midst of all of this, our common goal is, God, we want to serve you, want to go for missions. But how does that look like? How does that expression look like? And so we did the one thing that we knew at the time. We were so confused, because if I go to Hopkins, I mean, clearly he can't take the job, or else we would split, which would also not be a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. So we just felt like, wow, we were at a crossroads. And yet at the same time, we knew that if God was calling us as a couple, then we needed to make a joint decision. So through prayer, again, through the principles of 100% passion, like, God, if you want me to do this, I'm going to go all in. I don't have the money to go to Hopkins, but if you're going to, if this is what you're calling me to, I'm going to trust you. And likewise for Cliff, right? It's a huge commitment. And on the other hand, we were saying to each other and to God that whatever path that you called us to, we would be willing to surrender it. If Cliff took the job, I would just give it up. And likewise, if God called me there, he would give his up. And the amazing thing was, as we reached that point of surrender, God led us to an incredible moment of revelation. Because as the months passed, God began to open doors for me to receive scholarships for Johns Hopkins. And at the same time, God was also preparing the church leadership to receive Cliff. And so they had prepared the contract. So it seemed like God was progressing in each of our individual goals, but in separate directions. Mm-hmm. And yet, through prayer every night, tears and on our knees, one day we went to church to sign the contract together. And that was the day I remember I told the Lord, I guess this is my moment of surrender, complete surrender. And when we got to the church office, in our senior pastor's office, he just said to us, something bizarre just really just happened. We were in a senior leadership meeting, everybody was praying, and the Holy Spirit spoke to each and every one of us unanimously that we have to release you to go to the States. Hmm. And this is a season for you guys to pursue this in the Lord's time and way. And sometime in the future, this opportunity may open up again. And true enough, like after I finished Johns Hopkins, Cliff was accepted into a pastoral position, not in Singapore, but in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so in a very strange way, God brought each of our dreams to pass, but only after we had completely yielded and surrendered it. Yeah. So whoever's listening, I hope that this encourages you to see that even amidst the messy, chaotic kind of navigation that we have to make in life, that God is sovereign. And as long as we decide to wait on Him, not passively, like, oh, what am I just going to do? But in a way that is actively pursuing Him, mm-hmm. that God really can make Himself known to us in such a real and tangible way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that kind of brings me to my question about, you know, I think so many of us, especially in more first or second world countries, are content to live in small stories. We want to play it safe. Mm. We want to be successful. We want to make money. We want to build up 401ks. What would you say are some of the dangers of that? I mean, because we talk about the dangers of stepping out in faith, but there's also a cost to shrinking back as well. What would you say, maybe even from experience, Waija, or other stories you've heard of, you know, where that can kind of count a cost as well?
Wow. Wow, Lisa. I just get chills when you ask that question, because one of the books that changed my life completely was the first Christian book I ever read, and it's called Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper. And in it, he talks about the illusion of security, that all of us are lulled into this complacency by the world because comfort is so alluring. And we get drawn into this comfort of a stable job, a stable home, you know, putting our kids into the best school. And now that I'm a mom myself, I mean, come on, that draw of just living a comfortable life is just so attractive. And yet, on the other hand, what John Piper said marked my life forever, because he was saying that it is all an illusion. Like, who is to say that all this will not crumble and be taken away? You could be holding on to your job and the security you have, and it could all be taken away by, you know, a fire, a flash flood, you know, a cryptocurrency investment gone wrong, or even your children going into the best school and yet being taken over by depression or anorexia. And I'm not saying, I'm not declaring anything bad over the choices that we make in life, but I think what struck me was that when he talked about the illusion of security, it also meant that at times, following the road to Calvary might look like the costliest thing to do, but it's often also the safest. Because what we don't see, in contrast, is that when we choose to accept that comfort, we are actually at the same time also rejecting the adventure and the heritage and legacy of faith that we get to leave for our children if we choose to take the path of courage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so even at this time, as I'm speaking this, I'm saying it to myself, because I'm looking at my home and I'm like, we're in a perfectly wonderful place. And I can't believe that we are going to start packing. We're going to have to move to Tanzania, which is a mission field, if the Lord continues to open the doors. We're still waiting on Him to get our work permits approved. But it's that sense of God, it just seems so dangerous. It seems so mad, so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, it feels like the cost is so great. And yet the Lord, I feel, is inviting us to step into a greater and deeper faith. And it's only through that we receive an inheritance from Him that is greater than anything that we could make or build for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wish that if you're listening to this and you're living in comfort and you think to yourself, oh, I could never do that, try it out with something small. Try it out with something that you feel like something is at stake for you. And yet, when God calls you and say, go out of your comfort zone, maybe it's reaching out to a neighbor next door. Maybe it's about, you know, availing a weekend once a month to tutor kids from underprivileged homes. Whatever it is, as long as there is an element of sacrifice, ask the Lord to say, would you show me that the cost I give up is always going to be less than what you can give to me? Because, Lord, you are just so lavish in your grace and in your gifts. Mm-hmm. And I think once we start to build up those faith muscles, it'll just be easier and easier to take those giant leaps of faith when God calls for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, just thinking of another question that probably a lot of our listeners have, because so many of them are young adults, maybe in their 20s, right, getting started out. And of course, the pressure from parents or from other family members or counselors or those, what would you say is the difference as they're getting, because you experienced this with your dad, you know, for Nepal, when people are saying, I don't know about that. That sounds pretty big. That sounds pretty out there. Mm-hmm. That sounds, how can they tell the difference between true wisdom that they should listen to and just the discouragement or the fear that they're going to get from other people in their lives?
Wow, this is a tough one, Lisa. There is no easy way out of this. Because on one hand, the Bible really wants us to, you know, listen to authority and be obedient and kind of be accountable and, you know, live our lives in submission to those God has placed over us. There is a very strong element of that. And yet, on the other hand, God also calls us to love Him more than even our mothers and fathers. You know, there is that verse. And also, in one of the chapters, I actually talk about Moses. You know, the story of Moses. How did Moses become this amazing leader that changed the course of history? And it was because It was because the Hebrew midwives refused to kill the firstborn sons. The Hebrew midwives went against authority at the time to do something God had called them to do. And so whoever's listening in right now, I just pray that you would never, ever use the excuse of, oh, my parents didn't allow me to go, or, you know, my cell leader didn't think it was a great idea. Never, ever use that as an excuse to really press in and ask God for His highest will for your life. Because the truth is this, at every juncture of your life, there are going to be naysayers. And it's definitely not a poll that we should be doing in our lives by saying, oh, you know, 4 out of 5 of my mentors said that this wasn't a great idea because it's risky. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's that one lone voice that is God's voice. And so often in our world where comfort is our culture, anything that requires risk is seen as foolhardy. When in fact, in God's economy, the riskiest thing to the world is sometimes the wisest thing to do in God's sight. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to encourage people who are listening in right now that if there are naysayers in your life, not to take that as an easy reason to say that's not the way to go, but rather see it as a marker of the courage and the risk that's really needed to obey God at times.
Mm. And just a reminder here, we're talking about Dream Brave, which is Wajah's newest book. So really great principles here, great insight. As we wrap up, Wajah, give the listener an idea for what, you know, just that next step. Like, how should they, if they're thinking, maybe I've lived a small story, maybe I feel something burning in me, but I don't know what to do. I have a very secure job. I have whatever it is. What would be a next step? Like, how should they intentionally pray? Who should they talk to? What should this look like for them to start spreading their wings a little bit and broadening the faith that they want to step out in?
Wow, I love the question you asked, Lisa. What I want to say to listeners who are struggling in their so-called small story, as you put it, is embrace your small. Because so often we look at the big dreams that we think God expects us to pursue, and we're afraid. We become overwhelmed and paralyzed because we think, there is no way I could be a great Christian. There is no way I could do anything significant for God. I remember being 17, awkward and depressed, having little to no self-confidence. And I remember, if God could use that person, He can use any of us. And so when I talk about embracing our small, it's about being faithful in the small things. I remember when I first showed my paintings to the publisher who had offered to sponsor 2,000 copies of the print run, the first thing he said was actually, wow, these paintings are really bad. And I love that moment because it just goes to show that God values our availability more than our qualifications. And when people look at my credentials, they are like, wow, you were a consultant for the World Health Organization, for the United Nations, you were deployed to Africa. And I'm like, yeah, but did you know that although that was a dream of mine that I had written in my medical school applications when I was 17 years old, did you know that that happened because during the outbreak, when I felt like a nobody, when I was a new stay-at-home mom and I was struggling, I'm like, oh God, what can I offer to the world? I'm still nursing a baby. I can barely get enough sleep in every day. What had happened was that a strange request had come in through my phone saying, would you help us illustrate some health booklets for migrant workers who have COVID-19 and who are now isolated in different facilities, and we need them translated into 8 languages. All the healthcare workers are completely burnt out, but you're a good illustrator. Can you help us? And I remember the first thing I said was, oh my goodness, what a request. Like, seriously, I'm way more qualified than just to do these illustrations. But the Lord rebuked me immediately. And Cliff was the one who said, you know what, Wajah, today's devotional on Oswald Chambers is for you. And it says, Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. And I just took that rebuke and I said, oh Lord, I am so sorry. I started drawing those health booklets like no tomorrow. They were just simply black and white cartoons, Lisa. It was just no frills. And within a week, like the chairperson of the steering committee of the World Health Organization in Singapore called me and said, we need to hire you. Are you a professional cartoonist? And I'm like, no, I'm a doctor. I like do this as a hobby. And he's like, I need you to join my team. I need you to start leading the communication section of this outbreak response. And that's how I got roped in. And you see, it starts with a small story. It starts with a small yes. It starts like feeling like, God, I'm a nobody, but could you use me? Because it's not about who I am. It's about what you can do with me. And that's why the subtitle of the book is really A Dare to Live by Faith, even when you feel too small. So whoever's listening, I hope that this encourages you. In fact, the first title of the book was not Dream Brave. It was actually Dream Small. That was the original title that I had for it.
Yeah.
And so I want to encourage people to believe in the power of small things, because God is the one who makes the mustard seed grow into an oak tree.
So true. Reminds me, I often quote Elizabeth Elliot, who said, just do the next thing. The best way we can find out what God's will for us is to do what's right in front of us. So such a good word.
Wow.
Well, folks, I want to remind you, folks, we've been talking with Wajah Tam, and the book is titled Dream Brave, A Dare to Live by Faith When You Feel Too Small. And we actually want to make a copy of this book available to you this week for a gift of any amount to Boundless. So you know we love doing this with books that we feel like we need to get into your hands. And so this week, if you go to boundless.org, you can search for 843, this week's episode. Just click on the book cover there, you'll see it. You give a gift to Boundless, whatever you can afford, and we want to send a copy of Wajah's book to you. So if you've been encouraged today by it, and you know that you probably have a dream that you've been afraid to dream or something that God's talking to you about, this will be a great motivator for you, I think. And so you can check it out there. And Wajah, thank you again for being part of this conversation and for coming to us from halfway around the world and just being part of the Boundless family.
Thank you so much, Lisa. And if any listeners would like to connect with me, my website is on kitedreams.org. And I can be also found on Instagram, where I'm most active, at Tam Wajah.
Absolutely. And we're going to have all of that in the show notes, so you guys will know to find it there. Make sure that you look there and find ways to connect with her as well. Folks, we're here for our inbox. We have one of our fantastic counselors, Jerry, here to answer this week's question, which is a big one and a pretty broad one, but he's going to take a stab at it. So welcome, Jerry.
Thank you, Lisa.
Good to have you. All right, our listener is wondering, what is the purpose of prayer? If God's plan is always going to happen, why do I need to spend time praying and asking God for what I'd like to see happen in my life?
Lisa, this listener's question very astutely points out a very fundamental truth about God. He is sovereign over the events of the earth, meaning he controls it. He sees it before it even happens. God sees the future with crystal clarity. He already knows whether I'm going to get the job or not. He already knows whether my loved one is going to survive the cancer or not. He already knows who's going to win this election in November. So why bother voting, let alone praying about things like that? And I would propose that the truth expressed in the question is precisely the reason that we need to pray. We need to let this scriptural truth settle within us every single day. And I'm quoting Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 to 17. Paul says the Son, that's a reference to Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. So, Lisa, those three verses affirm the truth that the listener has already pointed out. God did create the universe. God does control every detail, but that all-powerful, all-knowing God invites you, and he invites me, to come into his presence. And he doesn't invite us to come meekly like tourists at a shrine that we're visiting. He invites us to come boldly with confidence. I love Hebrews 4:14-16. Jesus, the one Paul described in the first three verses we read, has also earned the right to be our high priest in heaven. Because of our faith in him for salvation, the author of Hebrews encourages us, "Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need." Lisa, if you were to go to your mailbox today, and you were to find there a personal invitation from the office of the President of the United States, handwritten, hand-signed, inviting you to lunch, how would you respond to that?
Yeah, I would go. And that's kind of a historic thing.
Well, it probably wouldn't matter whether he was your candidate of choice on election day. This is the single most important and powerful man on the planet, and he has just invited me to lunch. There's no agenda. I'm not a politician. I'm not an ambassador. I really can't help him do his job. He has nothing in mind other than he wants to get to know me, and he wants me to get to know him. And you said you'd accept that invitation. You probably would think you were a pretty big deal if that were to happen. And honestly, I'd think I was a pretty big deal if I got that invitation from Jim Daly. But here's the point. We need to multiply that experience exponentially and realize that God, sovereign God, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent God, the creator and sustainer of the universe, has issued us an invitation to come boldly and with confidence into his presence. And it isn't just a one-off, the trip of a lifetime. We can come anytime we want to, 24/7, and have an intimate conversation with the God of creation. Now, the question is, what are we going to talk about when we get there? Are we going to treat him like Santa Claus sitting on his throne in the North Pole? Are we going to climb up on his lap and pull out our list of wants and needs? Do we offer up our suggestions on how to run the universe? If so, then we believe that the purpose of prayer is results. Prayer is my opportunity to tell God how to keep the planets orbiting the sun, and specifically how to manage the 3 square feet of earth that I occupy at any given time. I submit my list of ideas to God, and then I wait for the results. This is an important statement, and I want to be careful here. I don't want to sound cynical. God has given us an invitation to bring our requests to him, and that is very important for us to remember in prayer, but that isn't where he wants us to start. Truth is, God is interested in having an intimate relationship with us through prayer. Jesus, God in human flesh, taught us to pray. And he said, "When you pray, say, 'Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name.'" I don't know when you used the word hallowed last, but it's been a while for me. Mm-hmm. Hallowed means holy. It means separate. It means infinitely bigger and more powerful than we are. When you come into the throne room of God, come confidently, but don't forget who it is you've come to visit. He's holy, holy, holy. He alone is worthy of our praise, and he has an agenda. Jesus tells us, when you pray, come in a spirit of worship and come with the right agenda. Say, "Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Lisa, Jesus teaches us to pray, and he tells us when you pray, talk to God about God, and then talk to God about his kingdom agenda. Come in a spirit of worship. Come in a headspace of wanting to see his will accomplished, his plan fulfilled. Lisa, the fact that God already knows what is going to happen is exactly why I need to pray. I come into his presence to worship him and to commune with him and to declare my trust in his plan for my life.
Great thoughts there, and really encouraging too, and just knowing the sovereignty of God and knowing that he's inviting us in to walk the path that he has given to us is really great. So thanks, Jerry, for
sure,
saying
Lisa.
That. Yep. All right, folks, that's it for this week's show. We will plan on seeing you around here next week. You can write to us at editor@boundless.org. In the meantime, if you have a question for a future show, we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org from Focus on the Family.
It can be challenging to inspire your community to see life the way God sees it. So what's the solution? Well, on June 15th, Focus on the Family is hosting See Life 24. And no matter where you are or who you are, you can be a part of this free event with speakers like Ben and Kirsten Watson and real stories about choosing life. See Life 24 will inspire you to translate your faith into action. Register today at seelife24.org.